Hello everyone and welcome back to the Black Eagles podcast. It's been a long time since we've talked, so let's get straight into it. A little update on my personal situation. I have moved, so I do hope to be starting the podcasting up again in the near future, although you might hear a slight echo right now. We haven't actually installed doors yet in the house, so it's not ideal to record when the missus and the kid is home. So for now, I can't promise that we'll be back to weekly episodes, but I'll try to squeeze an episode in here and there. So starting off with this one, of course, and this is going to be sort of a preview to the 2023-2024 season. It's about to kick off. In fact, tonight is our first game away at Fatih Karagümrük. Of course, we've already played 3 matches in Europe. We managed to eliminate FK Tirana from the Conference League qualifiers. We beat them twice. And we also defeated Neftchi Baku last week in Baku, in Azerbaijan, with goals from Muleka, Abubakar, and the third one. Who scored the third one? I'm getting old. Salih Ochan scored the third one, of course. So we have that return this week on Thursday. And as I said already, tonight we have Fatih Karagümrük away. Quickly, a little bit on my thoughts on that game. We should be winning that match. I think Fatih Karagümrük lost some really important players. They also lost our coach, Andrea Pirlo, who actually, you know, surprised me and I think surprised a lot of people. Had a really good season with Karagümrük last season. And Baya Diagne and Fabio Borini are both gone, and they were basically worth roughly 40 goals or something last season for them. So they have lost some serious gunpowder up top. Rumor has it that Adem Ljajic is going to start up top for Fatih Karagümrük tonight, so let's wait and see. So I hope we can get the win, get the season off to a good start, and then next week we have Pendik at home, so we should be opening up the season with 6 out of 6, hopefully. And I hope that these early European games has us more ready for these openers in the Super League. But let's talk a little bit about the situation at the club right now. Of course, you're all very well aware that at the moment it's a bit tumultuous. Fans aren't happy. Transfers are very late. We did make a couple of transfers relatively early, I guess you could say. But it took a while to get things going. I mean, relatively early. We've signed a couple of players in recent weeks, including Jean Onana from Racing Lens in France. We signed him for $4 million, and I think this is a little bit of a controversial move for fans because they don't really see the need for him right now, especially with Adjamitovic, Getson, and Sali performing as well as they are doing so far. And also last season, that trio really came together well. So I think fans are a little bit puzzled by the club paying €4 million for the young midfielder. Personally, I think, look, you have to look ahead a little bit. We lost a couple of players. Atiba retired. And I personally don't think that Onana needs to be a guy that is immediately in the team and immediately playing all matches. Yes, €4 million is a lot of money for us, but he's a 23-year-old player. He's a Cameroon international, which I'm going to get back to in a bit, about being an international for Cameroon. But he's definitely a promising player that could potentially, in the longer run, be of great value to us. People have been criticizing him after a couple of sub-appearances. I thought he looked really good against Tirana. He came in last week against Baku, and Chanel made, I think he did a lot of subs in the second half when we were 3-0 up, to make a point to the board, look, this team, the first 11 is okay, other than we don't have a right winger right now. But once I start taking out a couple of these key elements, then the team isn't what it should be. It shouldn't be up to scratch. And I think, you know, Onana and Amarte, who I'll talk about in a second, kind of led to Baku's goal, and people started getting really critical of him, which I think is unfair. From what I've seen, which isn't a lot, from Onana so far. He looks promising, and I think he could be a good signing in the long run. But I think it's a mistake to look at him as a player that has to be performing for us at a top level right now. Then the other signing that I already talked about is Daniel Amartey. He played many years, I believe 7 years for Leicester City. Yeah, I'm not sure about this one. I think alongside a lot of people, I'm not sure about this one. For me personally, it's not about the quality of the player. It's more the fact that it's another foreigner, and in particular an African foreigner that's going to go to the African Cup of Nations in January or February, whenever it's taking place this year. And I think with Omar Colley, who's, you know, it's another one of those players that got really criticized early on. Oh, he's not good enough. What is this? This is not Besiktas material. The first couple of matches. And then now people are absolutely in love with Colley. We didn't do a lot of podcasts last week, you know, last season, but if you read my comments on Twitter, probably you'll have seen that I'm a big fan of Colley, and I was straight away. And I think that the criticism on him early on was really unfair and unwarranted. And he's proving that now, because he has turned out to be a really good signing for us. Of course, people are upset that Romain Saïss left. And, you know, that's all only fueling the criticism on the board, of course. But Daniel Amartey, I can't say that I've watched a lot of him at Leicester. But, you know, you don't just play that many Premier League matches without having something, right? He scored on his debut, which, of course, isn't bad, away at Tirana. Yeah, I think he looked fine against Baku the other day, really. But then, of course, he had that massive error that led to the goal, to their goal, which, you know, no man overboard. We won 1-3 away. We're fine. But, of course, you know, people are immediately going to scrutinize that. There is already an aura of negativity around the club right now. So people are just going to, you know, whatever they can find to criticize the board, they're going to take. And, you know, that's just kind of the hysterical situation of things and how people react when they're not happy. And I'm not saying they're not allowed to be unhappy. Like, I am as well not very impressed with how the board have handled this window, but more on that later. But I think Daniel Amartey, you know, it's on paper a good signing. We'll have to wait and see. The jury's out on him. Romain Saïss was obviously a great player, but questionable ethics and questionable dedication to the club. He also couldn't resist but kick up some dirt after he left to Al Sadd, which I thought was very unprofessional of him. He showed very little awareness of self-awareness, I should say. I think, you know, what he pulled last season, I understand that it was the highlight of his career to go to the World Cup and that he didn't want to risk that. But, you know, he knowingly sacrificed Besiktas fixtures in order to be 100% ready for the World Cup. And then at the World Cup, he played while he was injured, and that cost him more games when he came back. So he wasn't available for us. And at the end of the day, it's the club that pays his wages. I don't necessarily blame him for that, because I understand it's the highlight of his career. But then I do expect a little bit more, just a little bit more professionalism, a little bit more humility, I would say, because he was very angry at Şenol Güneş, because Şenol told him that he wants him to stay. There were offers in January, but Şenol convinced him to stay. But then we signed Omar Colley after, which apparently pissed off Romain Saïss, because then he ended up on the bench. Which I can understand, that it was like, well, hey, I want you to stay, and then, you know, as soon as somebody new comes in, you end up on the bench. And then when Taib got injured against Fenerbahce, then Saïss played the rest of the season alongside Colley, and they were great together. I can understand that that's eyebrow raising for Romain Saïss, But Romain Saïs also needs to be a little bit self-aware and look at it from Shenol Güneş's perspective. As a player, you have already shown that you aren't fully committed to the club, not fully committed to the cause, so to speak. Then I think it's normal that a coach has hesitations about you. Also, I mean, I don't know if Omar Colley was ever really seen as a replacement to Romain Saïs. So maybe it looked to him like from that perspective, but I don't know. I think the plan for this season, especially with Taib out injured, for Chanel was very much going forward with Colley and Saïs. But Saïs obviously didn't want to because he felt like a bridge was burned and a relationship between him and Chanel wasn't what he wanted it to be. So he moved away. And then, yeah, we had to replace him, of course, and we replaced him with Daniel Amartey. Now, I don't know about Amartey. We'll have to wait and see. The jury's out on him, but, you know, plenty of Premier League experience. He is of a decent age, you know, still only 28. So we're replacing a 32, 33-year-old player with a 28-year-old player. Of course, you know, the 33-year-old player is a World Cup finalist, so it's not quite the same. But, you know, both of them were Premier League veterans, and so is Amartey. But I'm not the biggest fan of the Amartey transfer necessarily, but I think it'll be fine. I think in the Super League he'll do okay. But the thing I question most is the fact that they went for another foreigner rather than a Turk. And I think that they really should have gone for a Turk. Someone like, Koray Günter, we've spoken about him last season. I'm not saying that Koray Günter is the solution to all our problems. And I think definitely if you go from Romain Saïs to Koray Günter, you're taking a step down. But it does open up a lot of possibilities for the coach to play other players, other foreigners elsewhere. Now we're basically playing with Masuaku, Amartey, Colley, Rozier. So four, our defensive backline are just foreigners. You know, that doesn't make things easier with the foreign limit of, you know, maximum 8 on the pitch. So you have to have 3 Turkish players playing at all times. And I think that within our budget, within our financial constraints, we don't have the luxury of going to Marseille and picking up Cengiz Ünder for 15 million euros. And it's harder to find, good Turks regardless. But it's definitely harder to find good offensive Turks. You know, a good creative winger, a good creative midfielder, a good striker. Like, we have Cenk, we have Salih. You know, that's pretty much it, right? Like, otherwise, offensive players, you'll have to look at guys like Yusuf Yazici. I don't know what else there really is for us within our budget that is realistic. But yeah, anyway, I would have preferred to see a Turk. My friend Kartal, or shout out to Kartal, he was very much in favor of Eray Cömert of Valencia. I've seen Eray play live. I think he's a really good player. I don't really think he's within our budget either. But then you see, you know, we are offering 6 million euros for Lianco from Southampton, who came to Istanbul, mind you, and then ended up being sent back because there was too big of a risk for an injury, supposedly. But if you can afford 6 million for Lianco, you can afford 6 million for Eray Cömert, and Eray is probably around that price mark. And he also counts as a Turkish national, even though he plays for Switzerland. So I think Eray would have been a good option as well. So good shout out to Kartal for that one. So there are options, however limited, in that defensive compartment in turn and realistic. You know, of course, you know, we can't go and sign Merih Demiral. We probably can't go and sign Zeki Celik. And I wouldn't want to either, because Rozier is one of our best players, in my opinion. I wouldn't want to displace him. But yeah, I would have preferred a Turkish center back. And then hopefully Taib comes back strong, because I'm really a big fan of Taib Talha. I thought he did really well last season, and I was so gutted when he got injured and when it appeared to be a cruciate ligament tear. It's such a bummer, because we got him really cheap. He's a real warrior. He's a good defender. I think we really got a great deal on him, And for him then to just get injured like that, it was really, really a big blow. I really hope he comes back stronger. It's not easy to come back from an ACL injury. So I'm really hoping that he comes back and yeah, can find his previous form and build on it, and hopefully is spared from further injuries like that. Well, yeah, anyway, let's move forward with some other transfers that we have done. There, of course, I think the main reason fans are upset this summer, you know, it isn't just the fact that these transfers are late. It's also the fact that a lot of transfers have ended up in a fiasco, and mainly the Dusan Tadic transfer. And seeing him go to another club would have been fine, but not when that club is Fenerbahce. Of course, you know, everyone was getting excited and hyped up about Dusan Tadic, who is a fantastic player. Of course, he's old. You know, he's turning 35 soon, and that isn't ideal. But Dusan Tadic is the type of player that you can make an exception for. He's obviously a short-term transfer, but I think everyone was getting their hopes up. His statistics the last five seasons at Ajax have been absolutely incredible. He has scored... He has gotten double digits in both assists and goals for the last 5 years straight at Ajax. So, of course, you know, everyone was super hyped about that transfer. And then he ends up going to Fenerbahce, which was incredibly painful, especially, you know, when you've been hearing for like 2 weeks, he's going to have talks with Ajax to tear up his contract and all that. And, well, I don't have to make you completely relive that painful situation. I was on holiday at the time, and I was just, you know, constantly refreshing my Twitter, just checking, you know, is there any update? And there were some rumors about Fenerbahce being interested, but they were coming from, you know, kind of shitty sources, like Fanatic or something, and you think, they're just trying to rile people up, this isn't real. And then you see that picture of him in the fucking private jet, man. I think we were all kind of like, fuck me. That was some Mehmet Topuz shit, I can tell you. But, you know, of course, those types of things really got the criticism going. And then we had Lianco come down from Southampton. Şenol Güneş really wanted him. But then he got sent back because his knee was showing signs of that he could potentially injure it in the near future. You know, we've signed players in the past who had similar medical reports, like Dembaba. And I even think a friend of mine who's very close to Porto, who works for Ojogo, she told me as well that at Porto... there were similar reports from Aboubakar and his knee. And that's why they wanted rid of him a couple of years ago, because he was on a really high contract. And it was just, the risk was just too big. They didn't want to invest in him further because they thought the risk with his knee was too big. But, you know, I mean, Aboubakar for the last 3 years, ever since I was told that, he's been fine. So players who have that increased risk of a knee injury can still go on and have great careers. Like, look at Dembaba. He had a fantastic career still. I mean, maybe not the career he would have had otherwise, but still. So, you know, with a guy like Lianco, I understand that you don't want to take that risk when you're paying 6 million euros. You know, it's different when you're paying a small fee for Aboubakar. We didn't even pay a fee. We just signed him on a free and we just took over his contract, basically. And he even took a pay cut, which ended up in misery as well, because then he ended up going to Al Nasser and blah blah blah, but whatever, he's back now, so we don't have to worry about that anymore. But anyway, that didn't impress the fans either. And then there's some other transfers that were looking like they were likely, and then they dragged on and they didn't happen. You know, you had Nicolas Pepe most recently, now you had Ruslan Malinovsky. I can't even remember half of them at this point, honestly. So no point in really rehashing all of that. But what is important is that the fans obviously have gotten really disgruntled. And then on top of that, you have the whole situation with the stadium sponsorship deal that still isn't finalized. You know, for months we were hearing rumors about Gazprom, which... a lot of people were on the fence about, a lot of people were against it, other people didn't really care. You know, personally, I just want the best for Beşiktaş, and that is, I think, the most money, but image is also really important, so I'm kind of on the fence about it as well. So when then you started hearing rumblings of Emirates, and also not the most ethical company. Not, obviously, the company itself isn't unethical, but it's like what it represents, right? But you know, much more accepted in Europe, because you know half the big clubs in Europe are walking around with Emirates on their shirts, so that would have been fine. But that didn't materialize. Then you started hearing stuff about Beko. Then you started hearing stuff about Trabzon signing with Emirates, which didn't end up happening. But then Trabzonspor announced their sponsorship deal last week, and it looked really good on paper. Turns out that it's not as great as it looked, because it doesn't just include the stadium naming rights, it also includes their shirt sponsorship, their trunk sponsorship. So in reality, their deal really, it's a really good deal, don't get me wrong, especially for Trabzonspor, but it's not what it appeared to be. But that's also pissed people off. But yeah, anyway, so much that people are upset about, including myself. I am mainly upset about the lack of communication and the tardiness. And I have this impression that there's a lack of desire, a lack of conviction to finish moves. And, you know, one of those things, I think, like Dusan Tadic, okay, you know, he went to Fenerbahce. And then he gave an interview. He said, look, I spoke to Dusko Tosic, who's a good friend of mine. I just had a better feeling with Fenerbahce, and I was impressed with the project that they have, and that's why I chose to go there. And of course, Beşiktaş fans were immediately upset, and you know, people were saying, you didn't choose for a project. What are you talking about? You go to a club that hasn't won the title in 10 years. You're just going there for the money because they offered you more money. Blah blah blah. Look, the first thing I thought when Tadic signed there was, they have a better project than we do. They simply do, at least on paper. You know, we as Turkish football fans, we can see through it a little bit. Fenerbahce have been, look, they signed a bunch of players last season and almost all of them are gone again. That is just what Fenerbahce have been doing the last couple of years under Ali Koç. They just sign, doesn't work out, and then they somehow manage to offload those players, which they're much better at than us. But, like, look, they signed Edin Dzeko. Okay, he's 37 years old, but still, that's kind of a statement of intent. They signed a bunch of players. They've been spending a lot of money. They were working on a lot of deals simultaneously when they were doing the Dusan Tadic deal. On top of that, Ali Koç went to him in person to convince him. And that, I think, is the big difference. They are just better salesmen than us. Ceyhun Kazancı gets a lot of criticism. I'm by no means a fan of him. And I think one of the biggest issues with Ceyhun is that he isn't 100% behind what we're doing at the club anymore. Last season, he was all in. Look, whether he's qualified or not going to have that discussion right now, but he was all in. Ismail was his coach, and he had a certain vision for the club and a certain profile of player that he wanted to attract, was completely in line with Valerie and Ismail. He managed to convince guys like Wout Weghorst, along with Ismail and other players, because they had a project that they were fully behind, and they were able to convince players based on that. But then, of course, didn't work out. Ismail got fired. Şenol Güneş was brought in. There have been rumors for months that Şenol and Ceyhun aren't on the same page. I can perfectly imagine that Ceyhun, just, you know, in his heart of hearts, isn't behind the project 100%. And I've been in this situation myself, where when you're in a position of recruiting people, it's very easy to convince people to join your project if you are motivated and fully behind it. But when you aren't, it's very difficult to lie to people's faces and to try and convince them, because you don't want to. You want to be genuine with people, because the way, I mean, at least in my experience, the way you convince people of getting on board on whatever you're doing is if you're truly motivated and if you are behind what you're saying, what you're trying to sell. And if you're not, then you need to be a con man, because otherwise it's just not easy. And I think, you know, Ali Koç is just a lot better at, first and foremost, he is probably 100% behind his vision, because he does what he wants. He's the big boss. He's the big cheese. He has all the money. So it's much easier for him to convince a guy like Tadic. Plus, he's without a doubt very charismatic and all that. Whereas I think Jaehoon, I mean, things were being said like he was faxing with his agency and stuff like that, whereas Ali Koç approached him in a personal manner. And, you know, those types of things, that is stuff that I don't know if that's factually true, but it's an impression that I think a lot of people are getting. And I've just got the feeling that whenever it is we're after a player right now, like Ruslan Malinovski, for example, like he doesn't want to come to Turkey, for example. Roberto Pereira, we wasted like almost 2 months on him. Like, yeah, you'd never hear anything of, well, Emre Kojada went over there to try and convince him, or Emre Kojada took a private jet, flew him over, showed him the city, blah, blah, blah. That's the kind of stuff you need to do sometimes, especially when you want to convince players of the caliber of Malinovski or, you know, Nicolas Pepe or whatever, you know. And for example, with Pepe, the issue was never the player. The issue was he had to tear up his contract with Arsenal but couldn't agree. Well, then you need to show some goodwill, and you need to say, look, Arsenal, look, we understand you don't want to pay out his contract in full. We'll pay 30% of it just to soften your blow a little bit, just to speed things along and get that stuff done. And then 2 weeks ago, you could have had Pepe on a plane, and, you know, or right after the whole Tadic fiasco, like a week later or something, you could have had Pepe. And then it would have been like, okay, you know, we didn't get Tadic, but we got a 28-year-old player that 4 years ago went for 80 million, and there's a reason for that, because he did really well in Ligue 1, right? Like, there's ways of approaching this. I understand that we don't have the financial means that the rivals have, but there's just a sense of lack of urgency right now. We have been playing 3 European games so far. All 3 we have started with Onur Bulut on the right wing. Tonight we have Fatih Karagümrük, and Onur is more than likely starting again. That is not okay. We have one right winger, Rashid Ghezal, who was out injured almost in the entire season last year. How can you, like, what kind of squad planning is that? Right? One right winger, and you don't have any alternatives. Okay, fine. Cenk is injured. And we just got Ante Rebic and Şenol is notorious for easing players in. But still, come on. Like, we should have had an extra winger the first week, the first month of the transfer window. I'm not even saying the first week. You know, I understand we have constraints, whatever. But Ante Rebic could have been finished 2 weeks earlier, you know, or 3 weeks ago before he was actually finalized or whatever. There's just a sense of lack of urgency, and that is something that I think a lot of the fans are upset about, including myself, and that is why right now there's so much pressure on this board. And rightfully so. The season is already going, and we have to do 3 more key transfers. All right, today we announced Oxlade-Chamberlain, which on paper, great player, but it's also a player who has missed over 160 games in his career because of injury. He went through an extensive medical in Istanbul yesterday. There is reportedly no heightened risk of serious injury. Of course, you know, he's going to pick up an injury here and there, but let's hope, knock on wood, that he doesn't pick up any serious injuries and that he doesn't miss too many games. But with his track records, there's a realistic chance of that. On paper, of course, a great player. You know, he didn't just play for Arsenal and Liverpool for no reason. He played for one of the best Liverpool teams in history. at least in modern history, under Jurgen Klopp. And he was not necessarily a key player, but he was an important player at times for Klopp and a good rotation player for him. So, of course, at 30 years old, he can do a job for us. It's fine signing on paper. Same with, like I said earlier, you know, Amartey on paper, fine signing. You know, always it's on paper because you have to wait and see how players pan out. Then, you know, we are reportedly closing a deal for Bakhtiyar Saitundinov, which I've noticed some mild negativity online. Mainly, I think, because people just don't know who he is. I have seen some people refer to him as the Kazakh Tayfur Bingöl. But, you know, I've done a little bit of research. I haven't watched him play, but I've, you know, read some opinions from people who have. And they all seem to hold him in very high regard. Not just for his insane versatility, because the guy has played everywhere. For his national team, he plays mainly as either a number 10 or a right winger. But for his club, CSKA Moscow, he plays left winger, left wing back, left central defender. He has even played a couple of games as a right central defender. And I think the only position he hasn't played is right back. And the most impressive thing is that when he played as a central defender, he did really well, apparently, as well. So it's a really a jack-of-all-trades type of player, you know, a Hamle Oyuncu, kind of like Tayfur Bingöl, like Ekrem Da. The only difference is that Tayfur and Ekrem were very much budget players. They weren't quality players. They weren't key players. Saitundinov at CSKA is one of their better players. You know, that is saying something. CSKA Moscow is not a small club. Okay, they haven't won the league in a good while, but they're still one of Russia's biggest clubs. And of course, that league has kind of been bled dry over the last 2 years since the war started. But still, you know, before the war, that Russian league was one of the top seven leagues in Europe. So if you are a good player in one of their top sides, that's saying something. Like, some people were telling me that he's unproven. I'm sorry, but if you have that many appearances under your belt for CSKA Moscow, then you have something, right? On top of that, he has the quote-unquote Mavi card. So because he is Kazakh, he can play under Turkish status, which, you know, is kind of bonkers to me since he's a Kazakh international, but whatever, I'll take it. So he's going to offer a lot of options. This deal is supposed to be done in the next couple of days, probably tomorrow. CSKA have played their last game. Well, they played a game yesterday in the league, in the Russian league, and he wasn't in the squad, and supposedly he said goodbye to his teammates. So he's expected to arrive this week for 4.5 million euros. I think it's a great signing. I think this is going to be a sleeper signing. Like, I was comparing it kind of to Atiba. Not in the sense that they're players that play in the same position or anything, although, you know, Saitundinov can play in his position, but more so I think that people are just going to sleep on this one, and they're kind of going to underestimate and not really sure what to expect of him, and I think it's going to be a very pleasant surprise at how much he has to offer. Knock on wood, of course, and it's always dependent on whether a player settles in, whether a coach takes a liking to him, all that kind of stuff. You know, there's no guarantees for success in football because you always have so many factors to factor in. But I think he's a good signing. And then also Sky Sports reporting today that things are picking back up, negotiations between Beşiktaş and Arsenal, that is, for Nicolas Pepe. Previously, Beşiktaş was just waiting. They had an agreement with Pepe in principle, but they were just waiting for him to tear up his contract at Arsenal. That didn't happen, so then the transfer kind of got put on the back burner. But apparently now there's a little bit more sense of urgency, and Beşiktaş have realized that, look, we need this right winger position fixed. So supposedly now they have gotten in touch with Arsenal to try and find a resolution. So let's hope that something positive comes out of that, that we can at least fill in that gap. Other than that, I'm not sure what they're still planning. I know that Eric Bailly is an agreement was in place with him, but also same situation as with Pepe before, waiting for him to tear up his contract at Manchester United. But for me, this is really a transfer that isn't necessary. Eric Bailly is a really good player when he's not injured, another player with injury issues. But we just signed Amartey. We already have Omar Colley, who for me is, you don't touch Colley. He's a starter. So what's the point of having Amartey and having Bailly and having Colley, three foreign central defenders? We also still have Montero, mind you. And then not to mention that all three of them are Africans. All three of them will go to the AFCON. So seems kind of silly to me. Like, literally, if the AFCON comes, Masuaku is gone, Colley is gone, Amartey is gone. If we get Bailly, he's gone, unless he's injured. So then you have four defenders gone. Like, who are we going to play with? Nijip, Rozier, and Zaitun Dinov, I suppose. And then, hope that Taib is back from his injury, I guess. I don't know what else. So, not great squad planning, if you ask me. Other than that, we just have to wait and see what happens still. I think the main issue is just that they've left it all way too late. There's a lot of transfer that they could have finished. Zaitun Dinov, I feel like, could have been finished weeks ago. Like, they knew kind of what they wanted price-wise. They've been bargaining with them for weeks now. I mean, it doesn't have to take that long. Just fly over there, hash it out. Why does it need to take literally a month to finalize a deal like that? I understand that you're trying to pinch pennies, that you're trying to save money, but think of the coach, think of the team. Get that shit ready, man. You have plenty of time before the transfer windows even opens to get these things moving already. Like, they don't have to be done in the last couple of weeks. Look, I know we're bargain bin shoppers and that we always do it like this, that we're kind of trying to hold out until the end of the transfer window, hoping for some opportunities. And that is a way in which that in the past we have signed players we probably had no business signing. But yeah, I understand you want to hold out for one or two guys like that, but not your entire freaking transfer window, man. Like, it needs to be finished quicker. Anyway, enough ranting for me. I really hope that in the near future we'll be able to bring you a lot more episodes again. I'm sorry for the delay. It's just, I love making these shows. I know Sinan really enjoyed it as well. It's just really difficult lining up our schedules, especially with me with the move and with building the house and the situation we were at the time for, you know, living in basically a box. If you want to know more about it, I'll be glad to tell you in person. You can always tweet me at Rezarian on Twitter. Please feel free to be in touch. Follow Besiktas International on Twitter, @BesiktasInt. Follow me. Follow Sinan @Sir_Rights_alot. And hopefully see you again in a couple of weeks with some positive news. Hopefully this is going to be a good season for us. It's going to be difficult. Fenerbahçe and Galatasaray went absolutely mental on the transfer market. They have spent so much money. It's impossible to fathom where they're getting all this money from. And that's also part of the reason that fans are just so upset. You know, they see Fenerbahçe and Galatasaray do all these really big moves and they are left thinking, why aren't we doing this? And the reality is we don't have the financials for it. And the difference is Ali Koç is a billionaire and I don't know where Galatasaray is getting the money from. But yeah, I don't know. Let's just hope that the financial fair play catches up to them. Because this isn't a level playing field, but there's not much we can do about it. We just have to work within our means. We have to look at ourselves. And at the end of the day, if we put together a good squad, there's no reason we can't win the league. Because, look, at the end of the day, they can buy whoever they want. They're still going to drop points. Galatasaray dropped points this weekend. And if we build on what we had last season in the second half, there's no reason we can't make a run at the title. I'm not saying we're winning it, but we were solid last season under Şenol Güneş. We only needed a couple of key moves, and that's the thing I and a lot of fans are most angry about, is those key moves didn't happen, or they didn't happen on time. And if we end up having a bad season, I really think that it's going to be that. That's going to be the reason. Although I think we're going to have an okay season. Hopefully we have a good run in Europe, and, you know, whatever happens in the league, as long as we qualify for Europe next season, I think that's a good thing. It's going to be very difficult to compete with those two. But Leicester City won the league a couple of years ago in the Premier League. There's no reason we can't do the same thing. Anyway, that's it for me. And for Sinan, I guess, go Beşiktaş.